This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
In the evening with Lynn and Ayman, and we've been talking about monopolies today for the first half of the hour. And we want to know how it's affected you and us and all of us as consumers, because from a business point of view, it's like, woohoo, money. But from a consumer point of view, more often than not, it's like, oh dear God.
A lot of inefficiencies.
No choices. And this is coming because the Malaysia Competition Commission has said that they'll be stepping up their probe into Grab. And we would like to know your thoughts. Again, that number to call is 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. On the line with us now is Halim. Halim, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Good evening, I'm from Rawa. I'm on the way back now. Listening to this, I think monopoly can be considered during the 60s, the 70s or the 80s. Now we are in the 21st century, nothing can be monopolized, you know. It's just a matter of technology shift, whereby even pipelines, those days we're talking about Petronas sending gas, whatsoever, but then, of course, that's another part, that's national service. But nevertheless, when you talk about other kind of monopoly, even Grab, Uber, I think you have now Soka, it's just innovation. Innovation come into place and allow to this to happen. Even electricity, they are solar energy. You know, you don't need to put on the grid. You can have independent supplier providers. Yeah? And of course, the government initiative.
Halim, sorry. Okay, I think we've lost you, but drive safe from Rawang. And we also have other messages that have come through on the subject of monopolies, with a couple focusing on one company in particular. Sharmila saying, break the monopolies. Yes, especially Astro, who are too complacent. We also have this from Toby, who says, in a way, we've all been victim to the monopoly that was Astro. I hated that period when the only option we had to go for quality shows, which was questionable in hindsight, was to subscribe. I'm happy that now it's been broken thanks to Netflix, iFlix and other streaming services.
Yep, exactly. I've shared the same sentiment as well. And right now, there are other providers. There is Hip TV, for example, and they're also providing My Freeview, if I'm not mistaken. It's HD terrestrial channels. So there's just so many options nowadays. And that is the result of the breaking of the monopoly. People come up with new products, new ways to deliver content. And hopefully this will encourage Astro to innovate their own products and services to provide us cheaper, more reliable content delivery.
I mean, that's the best possible outcome. That's the one that everybody would like to hope
Whether
for.
Whether or not there is that will to do it, I don't know.
So Arta Singh says, to say Grab is monopolizing the e-hailing market is not exactly true. They look like they're monopolizing it due to their strong marketing planning. Compared with other e-hailing operators, you can hardly see any advertisements or billboards. Look at how many Grab cars with advertisings on the road.
Yeah, I think that's a matter of resources that the other competitors have.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about just now. So Grab is the incumbent in the e-hailing sector. We've got these new, relatively smaller competitors who want to come in and get a slice of that market share. But the problem is that they don't have the resources to compete.
So we will continue taking those messages. Again, we're talking about business monopolies, and especially from the point of view of us as consumers, how have you been affected by this? Are you encouraged by the idea that soon we may have fewer monopolies in the market? You can call us at 7733 2900 to let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. But in the meantime, it is 6:39 in the evening and we are moving on to our next story, which is a deep dive into the process of impeachment in the United States. This is, of course, after House Majority Leader Nancy Pelosi has officially announced a formal impeachment inquiry into U.S. President Donald Trump.
Yeah, so there have been calls for Trump's impeachment for the longest time, and especially since the special counsel Robert Mueller investigated Russia interference in the 2016 presidential election. But before this, Nancy Pelosi resisted these calls. She was worried that it would fire up Trump's base, especially considering that next year is the presidential election. But looks like she's changed her mind now.
Yeah, I think the recent bit of news about the newly elected Ukraine president has really prompted this this real, I mean, like you said, it's been going on a long time, but there's a sharpening of the point now, I think, that we're finding ourselves at. Only two presidents have ever been impeached, Andrew Johnson in 1868, Bill Clinton in 1998, but neither were convicted by the Senate. Richard Nixon resigned before he could be impeached, so it's anybody's guess how this one will turn out. Did you actually look to see why Andrew Johnson was impeached?
No, I didn't.
It's apparently because he was haranguing Congress.
Really?
Apparently he said things or made speeches to Congress that were, and this is just based off of a skim, I have to admit, I also did not do a deep dive into that one, but apparently it was because basically he said things that were unbecoming of his office.
Well, those were simpler times, weren't they?
Yeah, that's the thing. That, when I read that, I was like, oh. Almost charming now in retrospect. But I could be wrong. Correct me if I am. In the meantime, we're crossing over to Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, also a Senior Research Associate at the National Taiwan University. Bridget, it is always good to have you with us. Hi.
Nice to be here.
So, as we said earlier, the calls for impeachment have been happening off and on throughout the Trump presidency almost. Why do you think this is happening right now?
Well, I think there are two things that have really shifted in the last few months, and particularly the last week or so. And that is, I think that the Democrats have realized that that it is viable to impeach. They did not, Nancy Pelosi did not want to start the process until the Republicans, which control the Senate, where the trial for an impeachment would take place, would potentially be on board. And it looks like that the Republicans would actually are more inclined to consider impeachment and consider a trial than they had a week ago, given the issues that have come up in the last week involving President Trump's use of the office to attack a political rival, link this to political aid, military aid. So I think the scope of the issues involved have changed the political landscape vis-a-vis the Republicans. And I think at the same time, there's a lot of pressure within the Democratic Party to move forward. And I think, especially given that this is going to be an election year, and in fact, there's liabilities among the Democratic base if they don't move forward, given the fact that the scope of the issues that are involved.
So impeachments of presidents are rare, but demands for impeachment have been historically common. What usually instigates these calls for impeachment?
Well, I think we need to get the numbers, and I think this is really what's happened in the past, both in the Johnson and in the Clinton presidencies. We saw this also clearly number indicators in the Nixon presidency in the 1970s, which why Nixon resigned. When you have the numbers in place, then these processes move forward. One of the things that is really important to understand about the impeachment process is that it involves two different dimensions. All right. So the first part is the impeachment, which is sort of like an indictment. This actually happens in the House, the lower house, the Congress, House of Representatives. The Democrats have a majority in that House. And so this will begin, the process begins in the committee, and then they have to vote on this at the floor in the Congress. But the trial, which leads to the process of having someone removed from office, it occurs in the Senate. And both Johnson and Clinton were acquitted, Johnson by one vote. He really did alienate quite a lot of people in Congress at that time. The Senate, which is the other house in the legislature of the United States, is actually controlled by the Republicans. And so it's going to involve, and it involves a two-thirds process to have this person convicted. A person convicted. And so this there has been in the last period of the last week or so quite a big shift. And one has to keep in mind that this is an attack on Joe Biden. Joe Biden was a member of the Senate. He has many Republican friends. He's been there for a long time. So this has actually hit home to many senators across the party divide. So there's a big shift.
And, I mean, perhaps this is a simplistic question, but what are the differences between impeachment and criminal charges or proceeding in a court of law?
Well, in a impeachment process, it's basically it comes from the U.S. Constitution, Article 2, which has to do with issues of treason, bribery, or high crimes. Those high crimes have ranged from drunkenness to things associated with more serious issues involving bribery, and they involve a whole series of officials at the federal and state level. There have been 19 people in the United States who've been impeached. This is basically sort of in the court process, it would be an indictment, and then there's a trial. Now, in a trial in the case of the Senate, the trial actually is only to remove them for office. And so they don't go to jail, for example. That would have to happen in a court of law. But in an impeachment process, you would actually remove people for office. And so we've only seen 15 of those 19 removed from office. And 69 cases of impeachment have began in American history. But it's actually a very slow process, and very odds to get the person through and removed is quite a difficult and challenging one.
And what are the standards of proof required for impeachment?
Well, the fact of the matter is that they can be quite arbitrary. I mean, this is an inherently political process. It involves removing a politician or a judge from political office, from a position of power. And so those things have ranged, have had from, you know, a sense of kind of normative violation of process to the perceptions of wrongdoing and that have sort of criminal dimensions to it. But there are no clear standards, and they tend to, because it is not a courtroom. There are not significant legal precedences. There are not laws that guide the parameters of these cases. They try to fit within the sense of if things that were wrongdoing has happened, or there's a sense that the person is not doing their job appropriately. So there is much more of ambiguity and arbitrariness to the standards that are used for impeachment. Most of the cases involved have involved high crimes, and the ones that have really convicted very easily have involved issues of bribery. The cases that is now being moved forward toward President Trump, it will be interesting to see how it is couched. No one, for example, has been ever brought forward for a case of treason. Mm-hmm. I think it's unlikely in this case it will be brought forward as a case of treason, but maybe an abuse of power, for example, when there have been a number of cases in that particular realm. So I think it's a question now of framing what those particular allegations will be for the impeachment process moving forward.
You mentioned that this is an inherently political process. So with that said, has it been used as a political tool ever, or for that matter, is it always used or always seen as a political tool?
Well, I think, you know, you're dealing with politicians. I mean, let's take the example of the 1MDB trial with Najib Razak in Malaysia. It's an inherently political process because it involves a political actor and allegations of abuses of power of that individual. The same issues involve impeachment. But what distinguishes the difference between the 1MDB trial, which is in a courtroom where there are clear legal standards, is that in an impeachment process, the conduct takes place in the floor of the legislature office and in the committees of the legislature. So it involves politicians going after one of their own. And this is actually, makes it a much higher political dimension. And it is sometimes used as a political tool. Many people, for example, see the impeachment of Bill Clinton along those regards. And of course, the Trump camp would be portraying this as a sense of basically going after Trump and trying to reduce his chances for the presidency. I think there will be clearly polarized positions on this issue because people will not be able to see through the political lenses because of the high political nature of this particular impeachment process.
So in the previous instances of impeachment in the U.S., what have been the political repercussions, maybe not just for the players involved, but for the system as a whole?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think what we saw from the 90s in the impeachment of Bill Clinton was a high level of political polarization, which I would argue that America is still locked in terms of Republicans and Democrats. It's really helped to track the middle ground and the sense of consensus to work on policy problems and to address those issues of Americans. But it has made, it has also created tensions between the presidency and the legislature, which of course has affected governance more generally. And we can see this, for example, my favorite case of impeachment involves the allegations that were started against James Buchanan in the 1860s. He was a very corrupt president, and I think this is a very interesting parallel issues. There's some of the issues that were raised about Trump are similar to those in the Buchanan period. And in that area, you had a situation where it really affected the ability of the government to actually carry out policy. And there clearly will be spillovers of the impeachment process into other aspects of governance, like the performance of the budget and others. And I think Washington will come to be myopically focused on this as opposed to other issues that are affecting the United States.
So, Bridget, I think all that remains is for us to ask, what happens next now that Nancy Pelosi has made the statement?
Well, the committee will meet, the Judiciary Committee will meet, and they will have to put on this. So this is the first step, and then it will move to the floor. And then we're going to see what's happening in the Congress. But my sense is already what is more interesting will be the reaction of the Trump presidency to these issues and to the ground that's all that has emerged. They've already tried to release the transcript of the call. They're trying to weaken and to diffuse some of the allegations. So a lot of this is going to be played out in the public arena, where the attention is going to be focused on the media about whether or not there are adequate grounds. And keep in mind, one of the points I haven't made, which I think is important to close with, and that is this issue of Ukraine and attack on a political rival comes after multiple sets of issues involving Russia, involving the Mueller report, involving issues associated with perceptions of sexual assault. So there are lots of other issues that have provided the foundation for this particular issue, particularly the involvement with Russia, which I think will be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Bridget, thank you so much for joining us today.
Most welcome.
That was Bridget Welsh, the Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, also the Senior Research Associate at the National Taiwan University. And I feel like I know a lot more about impeachment than I did 15 minutes ago.
Yeah, it was very informative. I'm glad we had that talk.
Let us know if you have any thoughts or questions. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.